They say that life is a journey, not a destination. Apparently the same thing is true about redemption, about Gula. It's also apparently a journey more than it is a destination, or maybe it's both. Maybe it's a journey and a destination. But in any case, it's certainly not so simple. You see in this week's parsha the very well-known concept of the four lashonos of Gula, the four expressions that the Torah uses in order to express this process of redemption, Vo'otseisi, Vitzalti, V'ga'alti, V'lakhafti. And it's often discussed, but could have assumed that one word would have been enough. Okay, God took us out of Egypt. What exactly is the message of four stages, so to speak, four languages? The Ramban comments that there were four different functions that were necessary. On the one hand, you had to be removed from Egypt physically, Vo'otseisi. Then we had to be protected. We had to be sure that we wouldn't be slaves anywhere else, even after we were outside of Egypt. And that's Hitzalti. But then our Geula wasn't complete until God dealt with the Egyptians. God had to make the point clear to them as well. The Simcha Zitzelbroi, the Rashiva of Chevron, comments in this Ramban that it's apparently crucial. That's not enough that we knew that we were redeemed. It's necessary the Egyptians should understand it also. They should also understand that the deal was done, it was over. It was also a crucial stage in the redemption process. And finally, Lakachti, we were brought to Har Sinai. That was really the final stage in the world. The Netziv, in his commentary on Chumash, observes that it wouldn't really be conceivable that someone could go immediately from Avdus, from slavery, the standing at Har Sinai. It's too great a jump. It's clear that we needed to have stages in that development. And this process was one that inspired a very well-known mitzvah de Rabbanan, and that's the mitzvah of Dalet Kosis. At least according to one opinion, the Yerushalmi Yimsachit, it suggests that way, that that's perhaps the dominant view, but certainly the more often quoted view, that the concept of Dalet Kosis, the obligation of four cups of wine on Pesach night, is patterned after the four expressions of Gula. I'd like to take a few minutes to look at that concept, try to see how exactly it's patterned. There is a question that many discuss, the Mordechai, in the 10th parak of Pesachim, asks, why should such a takana be made davka around wine? Why not about other things? At the servings of meat, or vegetables, or other things you could be doing, say, why wine davka? What exactly is the nature of this obligation? And how does it relate to the concept of the four expressions of redemption, of the four lashonos of Gula? So when we look at this obligation, we look at this concept of Dalet Kosis. So it seems to be that there are two distinct ways that we can look at what's going on. And analysis along these lines is found in the Brisker Rav, attributed to the Brisker Rav. The way we'll present it may be a little different than the way he says it, but the general gist of this question is found there. One could, on the one hand, understand the obligation of Dalet Kosis as being a mitzvah of drinking. There is a din d'rabbanan to drink four cups of wine. Apparently wine, again we'll have to discuss what exactly wine and not something else, but apparently wine has a symbolism of chayus, of freedom. So we have a mitzvah to drink wine. And why four? So four, we apparently understand, again, the Dalet Kosis of Gula. Four is meant to pattern these four expressions of Gula. So that's one way to view it. We can view it as an obligation to drink wine, times four because of the four Lashonis of Gula. Alternatively, could be that it's not about that at all. It could be that we know that, in general, we find very often, when we have a mitzvah, it's a bracha. So Chazal wanted that we should take the mitzvah more seriously. That a bracha is just a statement, doesn't involve an action. So it's possible to not relate to that as such a serious undertaking. So the notion that a bracha should be made ahakos, in the presence of a cup of wine, is one that we find very often. We find it at Shavu brachas, we find it at benching, we find it in other contexts, we find it by Kiddush, although by Kiddush is allowed to analyze if that's exactly what's going on. So perhaps that's what's going on here as well. That perhaps in the Seder night, we have four speech-oriented mitzvahs. Kiddush, the mitzvah of the Haggadah itself, benching, and challah. Four mitzvahs that are all around speech. Maybe in each of these cases, so Chazal did what they do often, and said that we prefer very strongly in this case, we mandate that this mitzvah should be done on wine. And that's also an expression of freedom, because the Gemara tells us in Brachos, in the context of Havdalah, that the role of wine in the bracha fluctuated at least historically, based on how wealthy and how well off the Jewish people were. That when the Jewish people were able to afford it, so then Chazal were more concerned that they should use wine in making brachas. And when they weren't able to afford it, then they weren't so insistent on it. So if Pesach night is a time when we try to show that we're well off, we're b'nei chorin, and we're living in comfort, so maybe this notion, which is less mandatory in some contexts, other nights of the year, takes on the spirit of Cheres, the new significance. That maybe Dask on this night we're especially concerned that the speech-oriented mitzvos should be done over wine, and therefore these four mitzvos we're concerned they should be performed together with a cup of wine. So if that's true, so do we still maintain a connection to the four Lashonos of Geula? Is that still going on? Is there still a relationship between the Dal Lashonos Geula and the four cups of wine? Or is it something that's completely separate now, and it's only because there happened to be four speech-oriented mitzvahs, and if there had been three or five, it would have been three or five cups of wine? So that's something we'll have to try to figure out, and we'll try to come back to a little bit. So there are a number of ramifications of this question, and again, to restate the basic point of the question, do we look at this obligation as one of drinking four cups of wine, or do we look at it as four speech-oriented mitzvahs done in the presence of wine? So there are probably a number of ramifications. One possible ramification may be that there is a tosis in the beginning of Arvei Pesachim. It's a little bit hard to read. And tosis discusses the question, kind of by implication, of whether or not it's possible to fulfill Dalet Tosos through Shemaiah Kohen. Do we really require that everyone in the household that everyone in the household should have their own Dalet Kosos? Or it might in theory be enough that just the Baal HaBayis has four Kosos and he performs the brachas on them and everyone in the house will hear. It's a little unclear where Tosos's conclusion is. Tosos seems to recommend that everyone have Dalet Kosos practically speaking, but one could walk away with the impression that at least in theory Tosos felt that maybe Shemaiah Kohen could work by Dalet Kosos. It's a tough concept to understand. If we view Dalet Kosos as an obligation of drinking, so where does Shemaiah Kohen have any relationship to drinking? Shemaiah Kohen is a concept that means that when I have a speech-oriented mitzvah, I can fulfill that mitzvah through listening to someone else perform that mitzvah. But no one ever suggested that it works for matzah. And no one ever suggested that it works for Lulav and Esrog. It's not going to work for something that's not about speech. Words, yeah, if I hear it, it's as if I'm saying it. It only works for things that are about speech. So the notion that Shemaiah Kohen could work by Dalet Kosos is a strange one, is a hard one to understand. And it seems from looking at the Rambam that the Rambam disagrees. The Rambam doesn't sound like that at all. And again, this is something the Brisker Rav discusses. The Rambam seems to maintain that the obligation of Dalet Kosos is to drink Dalet Kosos. So one could suggest, as the Brisker Rav does, that this is the question going on here. That how do we look at this obligation of dalakosis? Do we look at it like an obligation of drinking? In which case, the Rambam would seem to be the compelling view, that it's not something that's given to Shemei Kaon any more than matzah or lulav matzah. Or is it something that these four brachos, these four speech-oriented mitzvahs, should be done in the presence of wine? In which case, maybe we are dealing with speech-oriented concepts. In the same way, Kiddush is made over a cup of wine, and we don't really have an obligation for everyone present to have a cup of wine. So too, maybe that's a concept that's relevant here also. But as long as the balabas makes Kiddush and benches and does all of that over wine, so there's no need for every single person in the room to actually have the wine.
Could you backtrack for a moment? Why should Shemekon even exist? What kind of concept?
Right, so it's a very striking idea. So apparently, if you take the idea, if you take the obligation of dalakosos as being similar to Kiddush, but basically times four, that it's not an obligation of drinking, but it's an obligation of making Kiddush on wine, saying Hallel on wine, doing the Haggadah on wine, benching on wine. So each one of those, if one person does that and everyone else hears, so then they're doing it on wine. It's look at everyone in the room is doing it on wine. The same way we say by Kiddush, just like every Friday night, we don't really have an obligation for everyone to have wine in front of them. So perhaps it's that same notion times four. That seems to be the implication of Tosfos. One could quibble. There is a suggestion like this in the Tshuvas Tisorah is true, but one could question if Tosfos ever really meant to say that the whole notion of dalakosis could be fulfilled through Shemei Ka'onen. It could be, if you read carefully, the context of the Mishnah is that the Mishnah told us that somebody who doesn't have enough money for Pesach, somebody who doesn't have enough to provide for his Suda, so he takes from Tzedakah, and he should take for dalakosis also, which is a concept that we'll come back to. So this builds on a notion, again, we'll come back to this, that dalakosis as a function of presuming, so publicizing the miracle, is a very central, important concept that causes us to go into great lengths to fulfill it. So perhaps what Tosfos was saying is that Prasumenisa is satisfied if there's one set of dalakosis in the house. If the household has one person doing dalakosis, so then we don't make you go out and beg for it. But if you can afford it, so then we certainly would recommend that every person in the household have dalakosis. It's only the context that Tosfos was commenting on was the Mishnah that says that one has to take from Tzedakah for dalakosis because of the pressing need of publicizing the miracle of Pirsumei Nisa. So that Tosfos says it's enough if there's one set in the household. But maybe even Tosfos would have acknowledged, even theoretically, that the entire function is not fulfilled through Shemei Kohenet. It's only the Pirsumei Nisa that could be satisfied with one household. And there's a famous story about someone who came to the Beis HaLevi. Probably heard the story. Somebody came to the Beis HaLevi to ask him a shaila before Pesach, and said, "Since I'm supposed to have dalakosis of wine, and we know that sometimes other drinks sometimes fulfill the purpose of wine, so what if I have milk?" And the Gemara sometimes relates milk to wine because milk makes you drowsy a little bit, so it has a semi-intoxicating effect. So what if I use milk for my dalakosis? Is that enough? And the Beis HaLevi said, "No, it's not really appropriate." But cognizant of the fact that dalakosis you draw from Tzedakah just like the rest of the meal, so I'll give you money for wine. And he gave her money, which was much more than she would have needed for wine. And somebody present asked him, if she needs wine, so wine costs whatever it costs. How can you give her so much more? And the Beis HaLevi perceived that what? That if she's...
Didn't have enough money for wine. She didn't have enough money for the rest of making Pesach.
Well, more than that, apparently,
she didn't have enough for meat.
She was going to have a milk suda. She was going to have milk, so she wasn't planning on having meat at the suda. So he realized that there's a lot more missing. So he paid for meat as well. But that's building on this notion that when you get the for the tzedakah for the suda, this goes not only to the suda, to dalakosis as well. So maybe Tosfos was only addressing that component. Somebody who has to take from tzedakah for dalakosis, so one set is enough because Prasumenisa is accomplished. So whether or not Tosfos really believed that Shemei Ka'onah was applicable here, which again is a striking concept we could question, but that's the way the Brisker Rav understood it and those understood it as well, that maybe that's the issue here. So do we view it like Kiddush, or do we view it like a wine-oriented obligation?
This could also affect the question of how much you have to drink,
in which you find three shittas in Rishonim. You find Tosfos and Tzachim saying that the obligation is moed lugma, aside when your cheek holds, which is going to vary from person to person. Og malach habashan, a giant og, is going to have a much larger shear. Or the Ran is of the opinion that it's a revius, a rove revius. And the Ramban and the Rambam apparently of the opinion that it's rove kos. You have to drink most of the kos. The kos has to be a sizable kos that's going to hold the revius. And most of the kos is the obligation. So here also, and this is again something that the Brisker Rav addresses, so here also the question could be, so what exactly is the nature of the obligation? If we're comparing it to Kiddush, where wine is serving the purpose of being made on the coast, or the bracha being made on the coast, so then the standard is moly lugmav. But if the obligation is actually focused on the wine itself, on the drinking of the wine itself, so then, like the Rambam, that it should be either a rov revius, maybe, or more likely a rov kos, is a more consistent view. So these two questions, right off the bat, might be relevant to this larger question of what is the obligation of dalakosis. Another interesting ramification that was discussed in contemporary Shilas and Tshuvas, the Rav in England, the author of the Tshuvas, Shraga HaMeir, posed the following question. Now what if, during the Seder, when you're benching, you would omit Yalav Yavo? So the obligation, the Gemara tells us that if one forgets to say Yalav Yavo in benching during a time when the Suda is obligatory, such as Shabbos Yontif, so we require you, if you get to say Yalav Yavo, so we require you to go back and to repeat benching again. So somebody who forgets to say Yalav Yavo would have to go back and bench again on the Seder night. And the Jabbi Eger points out in the well-known Tshuva, this is true of women as well, because the obligation of Matzah and the obligation of the Suda Pesach night is equally binding on men and women. So if any male or female omits Yalav Yavo, they're going to have to repeat benching. So an interesting question. You have to do the third coast again. That the third coast is associated with benching, so if you're repeating benching, are you obligated to do the third coast again? And that could actually also stem from this question. That do we view the obligation as four cups of wine, which happen to be spaced out however they're spaced out? Or do we view it as doing these four mitzvos al hakos? And in which case, if I have to bench again, maybe I have to bench again with a kos. There's another way to look at this question, though, parenthetically. It's not for now. But one could also analyze what's the nature of the obligation to bench again when you leave out Yalav Yavo. Does that imply that your first benching was no good? Or maybe it just means that it's so important that you say Yalav Yavo that we tell you to bench again so you can say Yalav Yavo. Because that would also affect it. Because it could still be that even if you're obligated to bench again, it might be your first benching still accomplished something and still was a lot, so that might be another angle to look at it from. But from the first angle, we could say that this may also be a subset of this question. Do we view dalakosis as an obligation of wine, or as an obligation of doing these mitzvos, ahakos? The Gemara says that if you drink all of the four kosis in one shot, so that's no good. Shasom b'vas achas, if you drink them all in one big shot, so that's not gonna accomplish what you want to accomplish. And what it does accomplish, we'll come back to in a second. So, what does it mean to do it all together? So, Rashi says that it means that you mix them all up into one cup. You poured all four kosos into one big kos, and you drank it like that. And the Rashban, and Rashi's grandson, the Rashban says, doesn't understand why that would even be a discussion. Because if we're mixing it all into one cup, so why would I even view it as four kosos? That would be one big kos. There's no maximum shear to a kos. So the Rashban says, no, it means we had four separate cups. But you did them all in one continuum. You didn't space them out like we're told to space them out. You didn't do it throughout the Seder of the Seder like you recommended, like we're told to do. And you did it all in one shot like that.
One shot means one bracha, or is that a bracha?
So the bracha actually in general, so machlokas, how we relate to the brachas, the dalakosis, that's actually a whole separate question. But even if it was, let's presume it's one bracha, which may not be an issue according to people, according to what we do, is a different discussion. Let's assume it was one bracha. But you drank four cups right in succession without spacing out the way we would normally do it then. So that's the way the Rashbam understands it. So it's interesting to note that these two views on what the Gemara is criticizing when it says basachas. So these two views actually parallel the two possibilities we're talking about. What are we looking for? Are we looking for four kosos of wine? Or are we looking for four kosos of wine in the right place? So apparently Rashi seems to be working off the assumption we're looking for four kosos of wine. So if you merge them all into one kos, then you're missing a key element. And why that's not obvious, you have to figure out why he felt that wasn't obvious. And according to Rashbam, apparently, the key element you want to have is that the four kosos should be spaced out properly. And if you combine them all into one unit, into one spacing, so then you're missing something for that reason. In any case, even if you do this, you didn't totally lose out. Because the Gemara says that you are Yotzei something. You're Yotzei de Yain, you fulfill the obligation of wine, but not the obligation of dalakosis. So that sounds like a real hair splitting, right? So what exactly is going on? Wine you fulfill, but not dalakosis. So Rishonim comments, when it talks about wine, fulfilling wine, it's a reference to Simchas Yontif. So you might think that in general, we know by every Yontif, there's a notion that Simchas Yontif, the obligation of rejoicing on Yontif, manifests itself through eating meat and drinking wine. So maybe I would have thought that on Pesach night, since there is such a specific form given to the obligation of drinking wine, that maybe that's the only way I can do Simchas Yontif. And that if I lose out on the dalakosa structure, so maybe my wine doesn't accomplish anything as far as Yontif is concerned. So that's what the Rishonim tell you. No, it's not so terrible. As far as Simchas Yontif, you still did do something. But as far as this obligation of dalakosa, that's what you're missing. So apparently there are additional elements within this whole process. And the element that's been focused on by most commentators is that there's an aspect of, in addition to Simchas Yontif, is the obligation to express cheres, the obligation to express freedom. And that affects the halacha in a number of interesting ways. One way in which it affects it is kind of a lose-lose situation if you're in this position, because you can't make everyone happy. A major machlokus concerning the situation of somebody who doesn't enjoy wine, which is not such a rare situation, and many people don't enjoy wine. So what if you're one such person, and many such people? I'm not such a fan of wine. What if you're somebody who really don't get such enjoyment out of wine? It doesn't really inspire you. It's not something that really makes you feel free. It's something that gives you a headache. So there is a psak that's quoted in the name of Rav Moshe Feinstein. It's not actually printed in the Chuvis. It's quoted by Rav David Feinstein in the Kol Dodi Haggadah, and in other Svarim it's quoted in his name. That Rav Moshe Feinstein felt that grape juice is not an appropriate avenue for the dalakosas, because apparently, since we're looking for hairs, so it has to be something that's liberating, something that's intoxicating, that's going to liberate you from your inhibitions. That's a core necessity of dalakosas, and grape juice is not going to cut it. And that there seems to be indications like that in the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch, because the Shulchan Aruch does say that even if somebody feels to get hurt by wine, to get a Gemara gives example, someone who had a headache from Pesach to Shavuos, and even somebody who has a miserable reaction to wine, nonetheless, he should still strengthen himself and still try to drink wine. You're going to make a distinction within that.
That's not right at all. Okay, I mean, so if anybody cites as right, I mean, it unfortunately shows a lot of ignorance.
Right, I think it's not right.
Because they didn't have grape juice then.
That's one possibility, but it's also
It wouldn't keep. It wasn't there.
Okay, that could be. But there's two ways to look at that raya. One way to look at it is that grape juice is not being offered.
Excuse me?
One way to look at that point is to say that grape juice is not being offered. That's what you're addressing.
It's not there.
Right, that's one possibility. There's also the possibility of the fact that the Shulchan Aruch is saying it doesn't matter if you don't enjoy it. That's not a key element. But that will also come back to in a second. So that's the psak that's quoted from Rav Moshe Feinstein. Again, it comes kind of secondhand. On the other hand, many poskim are quoted with the other opinion as well. And Rabbi Shechter Shulter records this in the name of Soloveitchik in the Nefesh HaRav, that the Rav felt that the same svara could be used in the opposite direction. That since we have a requirement of cheres, that it has to be something that makes you feel liberated, so if it's something that makes you feel miserable, so then that's going to be the opposite of what we're looking for. That if somebody has the opposite reaction to wine, and to them, grape juice works much better. So, Adarabi, you have to have grape juice. And this is something that was recorded in the name of many other Gedolim as well.
such a view is attributed, not just a view, such a practice in real life is attributed to the Chazon Ish, to the Chabina Rav. And one sefer that came out recently, it's recorded that Reb Shlomo Zalman felt this way as well. So there were a number of great Rabbanim who felt that grape juice may be at least acceptable, if not maybe recommended for someone who reacts to wine like this. Hi?
There's a similarity between the mitzvahs of Abrakosis and the Ner Hanukkah, and that I read that in each with these two mitzvahs, the person couldn't do them because of his oinus. There's no excuse. He doesn't feel.
Yeah, nervous. I want.
And the more something speaks that there should be gamay stock, and those who don't give out stock, so people who can buy the Abrakosis, and same with.
I want to get to that.
There's a similarity in the theme here.
There is. I want to get to that in about 3 minutes. Okay. So that we're coming to that. That's a very interesting point. Let's come to that in a second. But as far as this grape juice question, so this element of chayrus is taken in both ways. And that's why, unfortunately, I don't really have the safe side to make everyone happy. If you're somebody who doesn't like wine, and you're somebody who goes for grape juice instead, so apparently, the view quoted in the name of Rav Moshe would say, Nachanami, you still have to kind of force yourself to have grape juice. And the view quoted from I'm sorry, to have wine. Yes, to have wine. And the view quoted from, very good, that's a test question. And the view quoted from the Rav would be that, no, you're not Yotze with wine. You have to have grape juice because that, again, this element of Kairos can seem to cut in both directions. So what would the Rav do with the Gemaras that say that... That this guy had a headache from Pesach to Shavuos, so that the Shulchan Aruch saying that even if it hurts, you still have to do it anyway. So it could be that these individuals had a hangover, they had a bad effect later on, but while they were drinking, they enjoyed it. And it meant it was chayrus for them at the time. But there are many people who don't feel they enjoy it at all, even when they're drinking it to begin with, so it could be that might be where there might be, which there might be other possibilities as well. The Yerushalmi has a suffix, whether or not wine of Shvi'is, wine of Shemitah, can be used for dalakosis. And the conclusion in the Gemara is that it can be. And the commentary, the Korban HaEidah, on the side of the page of Yerushalmi, explains that the issue is lachem. That normally many mitzvahs, like Lulav and Esrog, for example, is a requirement that you should have to own it as well. And the question that we're trying to figure out here is, does such an obligation apply to dalakosis as well? So that seems to be what's going on here. And Nassim Gishtetner, a contemporary postdoc in B'nai Brak, comments that we maybe would have thought that since dalakosis is meant to express chayrus, meant to express freedom, so maybe it's kind of incongruous for you to have a wine that you don't really have total freedom with. That we know that all the limitations that are placed on Shvi'is wine, you can't do whatever you want with it, you can't sell it. So maybe such wine is inconsistent with the message of Chayrus, and maybe by definition we should be using wine that you can do whatever you want with. So that might have been the Havamina in the Yerushalmi. That's another possibility how we might see this concept of Chayrus affecting some of the halachas.
Could you re-explain that? What's the status of the wine of Shvi'is?
So the Gemara says that the Gemara says it's good. The question is, so why is it good? That's a good question. That depends on trying to understand what exactly it is that is the issue. So the Korban HaEidah suggests that the issue would have been lachem, and that then the conclusion either means that we don't need lachem, or that it's called lachem anyway because you're able to use it to the extent that you're able to use it. So what Rav Nosson Gishtetner was suggesting is, why do we even think it's just kosher, right? You can drink this wine, so why would we think that it's no good? Because since we have a requirement of chayrus, we're expressing liberty, so maybe it's not so liberated to be drinking wine that you can't do whatever you want with. Maybe if this wine has restrictions on it, maybe that's incongruous for a mitzvah like chayrus. That was the suggestion. And then now to get to the point that you were bringing up, so it's interesting also, the fact that we obligate you to go to such great lengths in order to get dalakosis. That the Gemara seems to tell us, and this is a notion that we find extended to all of Persumei Nisa, we find it extended, as he commented, to Neres Hanukkah as well. So we have this expression of Moicheres Ksuso V'Shol HaPsachim, that you sell your clothes, you go knocking on the doors, you do whatever it takes in order to make sure that you can fulfill this mitzvah, which is more of a chumra than we find by mitzvah deraita. When it comes to biblical obligations, if you can't afford tefillin, something like that, so then the Gemara tells us, based on a pasuk, that you're not, the way the Ramah understands the Gemara, the Gemara is talking about stuff, and the Ramah explains it to mitzvahs, you're not obligated to spend more than 1/5 of your money. And yet, when it comes to these rabbinical mitzvahs, Tanaka and of dalakosis, so then you have to really go crazy. You have to go do whatever it takes in order to be able to fulfill these commandments. So the Gemara source for this is really by dalakosis. The Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch point out that it should therefore, by extension, be true for Hanukkah as well. So in this context of dalakosis, so the Gemara asks, so what exactly is going on here? So apparently there was a battle between two kinds of Pursume Nisa, on the one hand. And the other hand, the notion of Rabbi Akiva that said in the context of Shabbos, of Asei Shabboscha Chol, the Altitz Darech Labrius. Apparently you should have a very toned-down Shabbos, a Shabbos that's not much different from your weekday meal. And you shouldn't become a burden on the populace. People shouldn't have to give you tzedakah. It's preferable that you should even have a very weekday-oriented Shabbos meal rather than go have to ask for tzedakah. So maybe I would have thought that therefore it's appropriate not to ask for tzedakah for dalakosis, but the concept of Pursume Nisa won out. That's how the Gemara explains what was going on here. And Avram Farbstein, who was Rosh Yeshiva of Hebron, and his shiurim that were printed, the Knesset of Rav, so he observes that this is not a klal b'chol Torah kula. This is not a rule that we have that Asei Shabbos b'chol is a concept by Shabbos. We wouldn't necessarily assume that every concept that ever comes up has the same idea. However, the Gemara is telling you, you would have thought it here. Because since dalakosis is all based on chayyus, it's all about expressing freedom. So therefore, to go around begging for the wine that you'll be able to express freedom with, again, may have seemed like an incongruous concept. So therefore, it's a chiddush to tell us that even so, you should go around begging for wine. That's an innovative notion because I would have thought that the chayrus aspect of wine would have made that not so indicated. Okay, let's see how much we're running out of time. So to head towards the finish line. So it's interesting to note that so we see these two perspectives here. On the one hand, dalakosos as 4 cups of wine, patterned after 4 lashonos of Gula. On the other hand, we see the notion of dalakosis as 4 obligations of speech that are done on a boat. And just to quickly recap the ramifications that we saw of that, so we saw that there was a dispute, so perhaps you could argue with it, but there may be a dispute between Tosfos and the Rambam as to whether or not you can fulfill dalakosis with Shomei Kaona. And the Brisker Rav thought this relates to this question. We saw that there was a question in Rishonim, what is the shear for dalakosis? Is it a molilugmav, or is it a revius, or is it a rokos? That may also relate to this question. We saw a discussion in contemporary Svar.
Yalviyavo.
If you forget Yalviyavo in benching and you repeat benching, do you have to do dalakos also? We mentioned that could either relate to the dalakosis question or could relate to the Yalviyavo question. And then we saw that the Gemara tells us that if you do it all in one shot, so you're only Yotze Yayin, but you're not Yotze Dalakosis, and so is the dispute between Rashi and Rashbam, what one shot means. Does it mean all in one cup, or all in quick succession? That also seems to reflect 2 possibilities in its distinction. And in that context, the Gemara says that you're Yotze Wine, but you're Yotze Dalakosis. And we saw that the wine apparently refers to Simchas Yontif, but the mitzvah of dalakosis, which could be a reflection of the concept of chayrus, that would somehow be lacking. And we saw that chayrus affects the halacha in a number of ways, that there is this machlokas among contemporary poskim, how to relate to the situation of somebody who's not enjoying wine. Is he able to use grape juice, or is he perhaps obligated to use grape juice? And that's at least the difference between Rav Moshe, as is quoted, and the Rav, as is quoted, and Chabin Rav, and the Chazon Ish, and Shlomo Zalman as well. And we saw the question of Yayin Shel Shvius, which the Yerushalmi says is good after not being so sure to begin with, and how Rav Nosson Geshtetner suggested that that was a reflection of the issue of Cheres. And also this question of going crazy to make sure you fulfill the obligation to go sell your clothes and to go knock on doors,
how there it's because we would have thought that the concept of Aseisha Baska Chalvi Alfis Darach Labrius is one that dominates even in the realm here of Dalakosis, because Dalakosis is about affairs, and therefore we have to be told that Persumanisa is different. Why is it, by the way, that Persumanisa is so powerful? So then we have time to go into it. Just to mention quickly, Rabbi Shechter once told me from the Rav that the notion is that Persumanisa is for the purpose of advertising that we like miracles and we'd like some more. We enjoy miracles and we want to ask for more if we need them. It's kind of a tefillah. So it's a little incongruous for us to say that we want a Kadosh Baruch Hu to go outside of his teva, so to speak, and to go outside the rules of nature and to save us. And to make that point, we have allotted exactly 19.9% of our finances, and we're not going one step beyond. Because we want a Kadosh Baruch Hu to go above and beyond, so we also have to go above and beyond to make that point and go even further than when you go for mitzvahs. That's one suggestion. Another suggestion, which I'm not going to do justice to in 15 seconds, but there's a notion based in the Tshuvas Avdei Nezer that these mitzvahs are different because tefillin, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows you want to put on tefillin, you can't manage it, so we can credit you for trying. But Persumanisa is about communicating with other people, and therefore it has to actually get done in order to get the point of the miracle across. But again, that's a little outside the scope of our discussion for now. But those are, let's just try to wrap this up. So those are two theories out there as to why Persumanisa has such a weight to it. But in any case, so these two Sfeldman are reflective of these two possibilities. Either four cups of wine patterned after the Dalid with Shos of Geula, or four mitzvos done on wine. So what happens if we take the second view, that it's four mitzvos done on wine? So do we lose our connection to the parasha? Do we lose our right to say this is a parasha's favorite discussion? Does it still maintain any connection to the Dalai Shomus of Geula? So the Mesha Chachma, in the beginning of this week's parasha, in his opening comments to the Torah, so he points out how even such a notion really lines up with the Dalai Shomus of Geula. Right, the first we have, the Hoseisi, Kadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Egypt. So that was about separating us from all the immorality in Egypt, from putting us in a context of holiness, which is what we do when we make Kiddush. Kiddush is about sanctifying. It's about being separate from the influences of immorality. So therefore, there is a strong parallelism between Kiddush and Vehotzeisi. They match up. Then we talk about Vehevesi, Vehotzeisi Vehitzalti, so we talk about Vehitzalti. So Vehitzalti, Kadosh Baruch Hu saved us from those who had hurt us. But in order for us for that to work for us, we have to make sure we're not going to hurt ourselves. We're not going to fight amongst ourselves. So why do people fight amongst themselves? Because they're jealous of each other. They feel it's not enough to go around. So benching is the opposite of that. So benching, the notion of we have what we need, we're grateful for what we have, that's meant to parallel that. So therefore, the Hitzalti is manifest in benching. Sorry? Right, so it goes out of order. It doesn't really go out of order because the way he has it slightly differently. He doesn't have it as Haggadah separately. He breaks up Hallel into two halves. So then he says that the Ga'alti refers to the first half of Hallel because the Ga'alti, so you were redeemed from slavery. The problem is the slave feels very disconnected. The Gemara says that a slave has no lineage. A slave feels he doesn't have any connection to his background. So the first half of Hallel is all about connecting to our ancestry, and that's a crucial step in redemption. So therefore, our recognition of our ancestry in Hallel, that's to correlate to the Galt. And then, V'lakachti, so we are being made into a nation. At Har Sinai, we're given the Torah, we're being made into a nation. So that, again, requires us to express our faith in our nationhood. And that's the second half of Hallel. The second half of Hallel is about our belief that we are part of this nation that has a future as the Jewish people. So therefore, it's an interesting spin. So even if one views the four kosas as inspired by the mitzvot of that night, that also contains and that also bears a relationship to the Dal Lashonos of Geula. And this puts a very interesting spin on it, that apparently all of these acts of redemption that Kadosh Baruch Hu does for us requires a parallel response from us, requires us to react in a certain way. And it could be, especially when we focus on the nation of Cheres. So Cheres is really a concept that addresses the notion of free will. That we have the ability to take responsibility for our own lives.
and that we have the power to be whatever we want to be. And therefore, when we state that we're going to meet the Kadosh Baruch Hu halfway, the Kadosh Baruch Hu does acts of Geula, and we correspond, or we lay the groundwork with correspondent reactions on our part that we make as free people with free will, so that's where the potential for growth really lies. And the Nesiv also comments, you know, the Gemara has also a possibility of a fifth coast. And it's very unclear what's going on there. Fifth coast, first of all, we're not sure what it's corresponding to. The Ravid suggests it corresponds to the Hei Basin. But it doesn't seem to be an obligation, even though it's mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam, but it's not likuva, you don't have to do it. So what exactly does this mean? This kind of obligation, not really an obligation, optional coast. What's an optional coast there for? So the Nesiv suggests that this is not about the Heves, he says against the Ravid. Rather, it's about another phrase in that same pasuk, in the pasuk before it, in the pasuk that begins this whole story, Yadatem, that you should know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one who took us out. He says that knowledge, that real ability to understand what's going on here, not everyone is so privileged. The Jewish people as a whole got the whole four languages of Geula. But this fifth stage, that means that we have to appreciate, we understand what's going on, that takes a lot of initiative from the individual. And not everyone has that close. Not everyone reaches that point. So therefore, this represents our possible initiative. And one could suggest, within the framework of Meshech Chachma, that the more we use our free will, and the more we pick up on our ability to define ourselves, to meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu in each of these four areas, the greater access we have to the fifth, to reaching the stage of the Adatta. Thank you very much. I wish you a wonderful week.
I think it's only half the time. Nice. I didn't get it. I think it's only half the time.